Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. We're into November. We are at that point where the events are getting a little thinner. Because we're just going to be busy and...
people will be eating turkey and buying gifts.
Yes.
There's no time for events.
Right, exactly.
There's only time for consumption.
Indeed.
And giving thanks. Isn't that what Thanksgiving is
no,
about?
No, consumption, Nick.
this is the They Live conspiracy
oh,
style thing.
I like it.
Consume.
We do have one, though, in November. We're doing our Gaming with Rogues, which we usually do on the third Saturday of the month. We're doing it on the second Saturday because Thanksgiving will be close.
Right.
So we're doing Mysterium, which is the game where one of you is a ghost trying to explain to others how you died, and the others are sort of trying to guess at it.
Yeah, they're like psychics and stuff like that trying to interpret the ghost's actions.
So the ghost is a silent player and uses these cards, these picture cards, to sort of try and give people clues, and the psychics try to interpret it. It's a really interesting game. It's sort of a mix of charades and Dixit, and... We've got a kit from Asmodee Games, so that not only will we have two demo games to play, we'll also have prizes. So the people who play the ghost will get these cool full-face ghost masks, and the psychic who guesses will get a little special group of little pawn thing that they
That's
get.
That's actually really cool. Those are cool prizes.
Yeah.
And I know this game has already built up a following.
Yep. So people should come out and play this on November 12th. It should be a lot of fun. News. It's a light news week. We're in that gap of not a lot of news right now. But there are a few interesting things. Probably the biggest news is that Brian Fuller is no longer executive producing or no longer showrunning Star Trek.
Right, right. He's staying on as...
He's still a hands-on producer. He's still an executive producer. But he's not the guy running the show, which he was already running, the Amazing Stories relaunch and...
Oh, I didn't know they were doing that.
American Gods.
And American Gods. And something was going to have to give, and it's not surprising it's Star Trek. It is a little worrisome.
Yeah, it's too bad because that's a project that I feel like, I'm sort of personally invested in. I really want it to happen. But I feel like it probably needs somebody who's a visionary.
Yeah,
I agree. It needed a guy who was really out there pushing it. And Fuller is one of probably a half dozen people who I might have named who could have done it.
Yeah.
I don't know quite where that's going to leave it. We've already seen a few pushbacks and things like that, or schedule setbacks.
I imagine.
And also, they need this series to work.
I imagine that the delay came a lot of trying to accommodate. Well, I don't have to imagine they mentioned it that they were trying to accommodate his schedule so that he could do this in American Gods, and it just kind of wasn't going to work.
Right.
So
they said if anyone's taking, or have they announced anybody stepping in?
They've announced who was stepping in, and it was nobody I particularly knew.
It's Steve, you know.
Steve.
Intern Steve.
Well,
I guess.
Intern Steve has seen several episodes of Star Trek.
Yep.
I've watched all the new Abrams movies. I feel like he's got what it takes.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He likes Kirk. That's his favorite captain.
There's still the possibility that this could come off, but it's just it does not have as many good signs pointing to that by any means.
Fuller still did a lot of development. There's still a lot I want to like about it, but they need this to be an out-of-the-box hit because it's launching their streaming service, and not only is it late, it's now lost its big name. I got to think Paramount's not super happy about all this.
You know, the only choice is they need to sexy it up.
Yeah. Sexy Star Wars. Well, intern Steve will
sexy
take
Star
care
Trek.
Of it.
Sexy Star Trek, right?
Star Trek, you're right.
Please don't offend the sexy Trekkers.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Can
sorry.
Can we just call that sexy Star Trek?
Yes.
That will be the new title.
Cut to the chase.
Yeah.
They dabbled with Seven of Nine and stuff like that.
Yep.
Just hit it. Just
everyone's
go
in bathing suits, sort
yes.
of Baywatch style.
Yep.
Lobo is going back to his original look in the comics.
Right. I am not a particular Lobo fan, but I still think if you're going to do Lobo at all, yes, he should be the obnoxious biker guy he always was.
He's had some good runs, good fun stuff.
I mean, to you, yes. I bought some of that stuff in the 90s. I would not go back to
did
it.
You,
I've.
Did you not enjoy his appearance
paramilitary in, Christmas special?
No, his appearance in...
Superman the Animated Series is the pinnacle
of
this.
That's kind of an exception. That's how Mixius Pinnelik was awesome in that, but is generally
kind
of an annoyance.
And then he appeared in the DC Big Crossover 52.
There's a two.
Remember, he was pretty good in that.
Oh, right,
he was Pope Lobo
or
whatever.
Pope Lobo. And his,
right, and that was still basically classic Lobo with a slight Rob Zombie makeover.
Yeah.
He got dreads instead of that, but he was still biker looking.
So I think the difference here, Nick, is you approach this the same way you approach Deadpool, and we approach the same way we approach Deadpool, which is you look at that and you're like, ah, that's Lobo as he's meant to be. And Dave and I are like, ah, that's Lobo in a way that doesn't actively offend me.
For those who don't know, Lobo, when they did the DC New 52 about, what, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
He became Twilight Lobo.
They revamped him as a sort of a handsome but predatory bounty hunter. He did look, kind of had that Twilight prettiness to him.
If they had X-Body spray in space, that's what he would wear.
It's like, I know scents can't travel through space, but somehow I'm smelling X.
Yeah.
It was they had some talented writers associated with, like, Colin Bunn. I don't think he created that notion, but
I feel like it might have been Marguerite Bennett who created him.
It seems possible.
And it's not like, it wasn't like the creators were bad. It's just like it was just a bad idea from the outset.
Right. None of the existing fans were going to be able to warm to that.
And none of the new fans were going to be like, oh, that's what I wanted.
Right. So it was a bad concept and a bad fit.
People knew there were biker Lobo.
My favorite take on Lobo is, and the one time I really did like him was in the Superman animated series when the story had a strong sense of humor to it.
Yeah.
Most of the time I find, like, when he's just off in his own comic, his satire is a little too obnoxious. And when he's in the DC universe back in the day, he was kind of also sort of obnoxious. But I like him. A humorous but kind of badass take is a good one for
this
him.
This is on him on a team, though, right? This is Justice
He's
League
in Justice
America.
League somehow, yeah. But the thing is, I think he works well as a foil. He works well as a guy causing trouble for the heroes.
Yeah, yep.
Not a bad guy, but a villain. Some of a guy is sort of amoral, causing trouble for heroes who don't really like bounty hunters.
Right.
You know, in role-playing games, how there's like always some guy who wants to go and tip over the statue of the god whose temple you're in or whatever?
Or wants to start fights when you're all trying to do role-playing
exactly.
stuff.
Yeah. Lobo was kind of that guy.
Yeah.
And like every once in a while that prompts a story into kind of a fun, entertaining place. But if it's around all the time, you're like, oh my god, we need to get this guy out of the party.
Yeah.
Although
Lobo would pair well with Guy Gardner, like the two of them and a buddy cop, but that'd be
there's places you can make him work. So I generally say happy about this change up.
Actually, the Space Midnight Run kind of thing, not exactly Midnight Run, but where Guy Gardner was the GL and he got paired with this bounty hunter Lobo.
Yeah, I could
see
that'd
be a fun story.
Yeah, I think the obvious thing of, you know, Lobo whenever he's like mixed up with Superman and, you know, it's like, okay, Superman is like super squeaky clean and Lobo is like scumbag.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that one's kind of too easy. I think it'd be more fun to have somebody like Guy or somebody in that mix.
Yeah. By the way, you do know that Danny Trejo was, I don't know if he threw his name in the ring or if the internet threw his name in the ring.
I think he might have actually done it.
Danny Trejo should play Lobo.
Yeah, they should.
I just want to be on record for that. The Defenders, the upcoming Netflix Defenders from Marvel, has announced that they are going to be an 8-episode series.
As opposed to, like, what, 12, 13?
13.
That they've been doing typically?
Which is great news, because every one of the Marvel Netflix series, even the ones everybody loved, has been like, people like, this is too long.
I agree. I did see a few friends posting this with little sad faces.
Really?
And I think there was just, like, it's just a little bit less things to love. Like, I just want more of the things I like. I just want more to cram in my mouth.
That's what leads to 5 Batman titles a month, people.
or 10 X-Men books.
10 X-Men books.
10 Avengers books.
It's never a good idea.
Yeah. Have there been any... There have not been any, I guess, of the Netflix series that have not felt a little overblown. Do you think?
No, they've all been. Luke Cage.
At least a few episodes long.
Luke Cage, both seasons of Daredevil, and Jessica Jones all felt too long.
See, I guess I haven't finished Luke Cage and I haven't finished Jessica Jones.
So you definitely think they feel too long.
But I have to disagree with you on the Daredevil stuff.
Really?
I was not bored or kind of...
There's a point I reach with Daredevil. It's usually about episode 8 or 9 where I'm like, okay, get to it already.
Meh.
And the Daredevil thing, there was Punisher and Elektra, and there was the Hand. There was plenty of stuff to fill the time, but it always felt like they were stretching.
Yeah. I never got that feeling with Daredevil.
So Nick, are you sad that there's fewer episodes, or do you agree that it could be a good thing to tighten it up?
Oh no, I think it's probably a good thing to tighten it up. I mean. I'm sure there will be people who think 8 episodes is too long for a crossover miniseries, so... we'll see.
I don't know. A crossover miniseries does need some room to breathe.
See, that's the other thing for me. If for any of these they were going to cut it down, I would have thought it made more sense for all the Scylla shows to be 8 episodes and the crossover to be 13, because then you can really let all the characters interacting breathe.
Right. But what we did see, like, if you go back to the Justice League animated series and then Justice League Unlimited,
yeah.
I think most people would agree that it was at its best when it was Justice League Unlimited and they were doing these more focused singular episodes than the sprawling, like, three-episode arcs.
Yeah, the three-parters did not work as well.
For Justice League.
Unlimited, yeah. When they had half an hour and a bigger cast worked better somehow.
Yeah, so I think, weirdly, when you have a big group, that's almost the time you need to tighten your belt. So yeah. it may work out.
They have announced another crossover. There's a lot of these sort of licensed crossovers. Star Trek The Next Generation and Aliens.
Yeah, saw that. Immediately followed by there better be a Borg xenomorph.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah, that would be pretty cool.
So is this like movie or?
It's comic.
It's comic.
Okay.
Yeah.
IDW Dark Horse.
It sounds like fun. I mean, like, they've kind of... You know, there have been times on Star Trek Next Generation, I kind of can't think of a specific episode, but where they've gone up against some creatures that are just like in beast mode the whole time and not something he can particularly negotiate with.
Yeah.
But it does present an interesting challenge in that sense, because Picard is kind of a... he's an intellectual type, and the aliens are just raw aggression.
Yeah.
You can't bargain with that.
Yeah.
I'm
interested to see, and Star Trek is all about exploration, so the notion of sort of the explorers happen upon something they shouldn't.
You know what I had a notion? Do you remember this, there was like maybe two or three episodes where there was this kind of archaeologist, Tomb Raider type chick that Picard had a thing for, Vash.
Yeah.
And they had like a little, they had a fling periodically. And he was like, I don't approve of what you do, but you're hot.
But you're hot.
Yeah. and I was thinking, she was clearly always getting into stuff she shouldn't, if she accidentally uncovered the aliens.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Whether she sort of died or was injured by them or whatever, it would certainly push him to be in a sort of more aggressive mode, and that could be an interesting place.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. Picard was a different kind of captain than Kirk.
Uh-huh.
But he had his ladies.
He did.
He had Guinan. There was the whole past he had with the doctor, Crusher.
Yeah.
He had Vash. I'm sure there's some others.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some others,
He got full-on married in that one episode where he turned into an old man.
And in the...
It's the best synopsis ever of that episode, by the way.
What was the worst of the movies? Insurrection. I think there was a girl he fell for on the planet. He had a movie love, you know, which is a very standard thing.
Yeah.
You know, you fall in love for one movie. And even in, like, First Contact... He got a kiss out of that one. That was all he got.
I also always feel like Ian Riker had a little thing going on.
Almost certainly. Yeah. In my quarters, number one.
Yeah.
but anyway, yes, I think something could be done with this. You know, it's franchise crossover stuff. It's not going to be great. It's the best you hope for is it's fun.
I mean, the Green Lantern Star Trek was fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've seen good stuff with Judge Dredd.
You know what I want to know? Why is Marvel... Is Marvel just hated in the industry? Like, everybody's crossing with everybody. Like, Dark Horse and IDW are doing these crossovers. IDW and DC. DC and Dark Horse.
Is it possible they feel they're so big that all they're doing is lending some of their star power to other people when they do it?
I mean, is it a Disney thing? It's a bummer. I mean, even like we talked about way back in the day, like when they were doing that Tron Legacy covers, like a Tron Marvel crossover would be fun.
Right.
A Marvel Star Wars crossover would be fun.
Like weirdly, Tron is one of those handful of things that, you know how like in the 80s, ROM and Micronauts were these licensed properties that actually managed to integrate with the Marvel Universe?
Yeah.
I could almost see that of Tron. You take like Flynn or whatever, you have him as like one of the... top hackers, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. tried to recruit him and he turned him down because he just wanted to be about games, but he was so cutting edge and he created this sort of Tron universe. And periodically, the Marvel heroes, just as they'd go to the Microverse, would go have adventures in Tronville.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, the thing about, Marvel didn't have a hacker like Oracle or any of those people. They've got Rick Jones, now suddenly a hacker, but they don't have that kind of character.
I honestly think it could be fun. You would periodically get to read, you know, show how all the superheroes look in Tron World.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But
yeah, I mean, even if
that's a Disney property, so they don't even have to go outside their comfort zone.
That's the thing. Even if they don't want to go to other licenses,
Merge it with Frozen, but that's a separate story.
Yeah, even if they don't want to do that, but like, there's all kinds of Disney stuff they can merge with. Like, why haven't they done a Kingdom Hearts style Disney plus Marvel
right.
story.
Why isn't there an Incredibles ongoing
yeah,
series?
Why is there such a dividing line? Whereas everybody else is having fun playing everybody else's sandboxes.
Yeah.
And Disney isn't even exploring their own.
It does seem clear. I mean, like, has there even been a single crossover in, say, the last 5 years? Anything that they've done?
I can't think of one.
No Wolverine Red Sonja or anything like that?
I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I can't think of one either. So it seems like they probably made a deliberate decision because you know yeah. that there probably have to be offers.
Because, I mean, Dynamite, Dark Horse, IDW, and DC have all done crossovers with each other.
Yeah.
So it is kind of weird. It's sort of notable by its absence.
It is possible that they may... I think it may be that we're too big now. Yeah. It's like all we're... You know, Dark Horse is kind of... lying fallow. We got the Star Wars license back yeah. from them. We don't want to tip the hat to their Aliens license as much as we'd like Wolverine to chop up an alien.
Sure. Yeah, that's too bad.
So red tape.
Oh man, they Disney lives. That's where they
yeah,
live.
Yeah, I don't think it could be. I think it's got to be a deliberate decision. It's too bad because I would love to see Marvel's characters. We're all fans.
I mean, these days, like about every 6 months, DC is crossing over with something. Yeah, Ninja something Turtles fun. Are crossing over with Batman.
Yeah.
Power Rangers are about to cross over with Justice League, yeah. so it's clearly very doable, I think. I just
right. It's seems like a fun idea that's being left on the table.
Yeah.
All right, finally, James Gunn announced that he filmed the next four Stan Lee cameos.
Right.
Actually, he said somebody else filmed one of them. I don't know if that's like a DP of his or whatever, but...
Yeah. The unspoken acknowledgement here is that Stan's getting old and they want to make sure to film it before he
I'm
croaks.
Guessing that's what the... I mean, they didn't say that... But I'm guessing that was
the
plan.
That's cool. That's a classy thing to yeah. do. But yeah, and you know, so Stan Lee's getting old.
So what does that mean? We have...
What did he film? He filmed one for Doctor Strange.
Yes.
Filmed one for Guardians. Actually, he said, I didn't film one of them. You'll be surprised to hear which one it was. So I'm guessing he didn't film the one for Guardians.
Probably not.
And then post that, we've got what? Spider-Man?
Maybe?
Or is that... That's a Sony thing.
Yeah.
That might not be it.
Captain Marvel?
Maybe. We don't know what the next ones are, right? Like, I feel like a bad Marvel Cinematic Universe fan, but I don't actually know post-Doctor Strange. Oh, Thor Ragnarok, of
Thor
course.
Ragnarok,
that's one of
yes.
them. What's the other movie next year? Is Captain Marvel the next other movie? Can't be.
When's Infinity Gauntlet hitting?
Or is it Avengers?
No, Avengers isn't until, like, 2018, is it?
Is it?
I don't know. I have to look up the list, because I thought I was up on these, but now that I think about it, Doctor Strange, then Thor Ragnarok, and I don't know what the other one
Avengers
is. Oh, duh, it's Thor and Guardians next year.
It's just Thor and Guardians?
It's just Thor and Guardians. They're not at three. And Thor, Guardians, and Spider-Man.
Right.
So I'm guessing that he may be slightly ahead. Like, Doctor Strange, Thor, Guardians, and either the fourth one was Spider-Man, or... For all I know, this has been on the internet, and we all know what all the movies are, by the way. We're just speculating wildly,
yes.
because why not?
But, Stan Lee's appearance in these are some of the best cameos of their sorts.
Tony Stank.
They're almost always funny. It's weird because they do kind of, it's a slight meta thing
yeah.
that happens every time. But I think because he's got such a entertaining persona, it's always kind of fun.
Yeah. It's going to be a shame when we lose him and we can't have yeah. that in the Marvel Cinematic yeah. anymore.
So that'll be definitely the worst thing about Stan Lee's death is that he can't cameo anymore.
For me.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I ain't his wife.
Yeah, how does that affect me in any other way?
But
I mean, he started canceling a lot of his appearances at conventions.
Yeah, well, he's in his 90s. I mean, yeah. the guy's in good shape for his 90s, but yeah. he's getting up there.
Yeah.
I think we need a Futurama him, and he needs to be a frozen head.
Yeah, that's clearly the thing to do. But yeah, I will look forward to all those cameos. James Gunn is as good a guy as any to be directing him.
Yeah, I'm excited to see his cameo in Doctor Strange in a couple of days.
Yep.
And I think he should be like a wash-up from the Ancient Ones pupils or something like that.
He'll probably be the guy who like sells him the townhouse on Bleecker Street or something.
I can see that. Yeah. It has a checkered history.
All right. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, November 2nd. And guys, I don't want to stress you out here, but
what?
We're 2 months from our best of comics for the year. You guys working on your lists? Mm-hmm.
You know what? No, obviously. But
I like that. No, obviously, I'm not a crazy person like you.
But I feel like I can put together some stuff this year. I think there's I've had some fun discoveries. There's a few things I was late to. Like, I tried Harrow County, which has been going on for, like, well over a year.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this series is pretty rocking. But it wouldn't be able to make the cut for anything this year.
My list is already in development, of course. I like making lists.
Yep, sure.
And so, yeah, I'm excited. There's a lot of good stuff this year.
And I'm down to the wire, you know. I'll do a couple
the week,
of
the day of.
Cut
day
get to of me on December 29th.
Well, you never know what's going to happen between now and then. I mean, something might pop up that's
but
amazing.
Randy is just Randy is cleverly assessing things as they go so he doesn't miss anything.
That's
he
right.
He does it the entire year. He that's makes right. his list.
I do.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's seven-style craziness with, like, journals written in tiny print that only he can read.
You're just saying that because I killed all those people according to the biblical sense.
He hides those journals. There's
no, it's because of your cramped writing.
Oh, okay. At any rate, comics this week, though, a couple new contenders late in the year here. I usually, when something comes out in November, I don't put it on my, like, best series. When there's only one or two issues, I feel like I can't fairly judge
the
it.
The very book that I am going to pick as my pick of the week is one that I would say is for sure deserves, like, either a best new title possible consideration or best ongoing, like, title or something like that.
I always worry about recency bias. Like, stuff that comes out now that you like, you may not love it as much as you love something back in January, but you don't remember how much you love January. That's why I make my lists.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. But I will say this writer has a pretty good pedigree for consistency.
Yeah. Why don't we start with your pick?
No. said writer is Mark Waid, who's Daredevil. I waited like 6 years or 5 years or whatever it was for the bottom to drop out and for it to start sucking.
And it was a good solid ending.
It was a good ending. But the title in question today is Champions number 2 from Marvel. This was a series I did not get around to reading in the first week it came out, so I only read the first issue a couple weeks back, and I was like, oh man, that was an awesome issue. And as it turns out, issue 2, also awesome.
This could have been any of our picks, by the way. We all loved this issue.
Yep. And it had a cool concept, which managed to have both, it reminded me of the fun stuff in, like, X-Men, like, baseball games and stuff like that of old. That kind of sense of fun. While at the same time having some character dynamics going on and even some action of a sort in it. The reason it reminded me of it, it's a campout.
Yep.
It's a campout issue with the members of the Champions, which just to remind people, that's what do they call it? Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yep.
That is Amadeus Cho. Mm-hmm. What's the Vision's daughter's name?
Viv.
Spider-Man, the Miles Morales Spider-Man, Nova, and Miss Marvel. And a possible new member as of this issue, which I guess he's right on the cover. It's Cyclops. That is the young clone Cyclops.
Yep.
Not clone.
That's right. He's just time displaced.
Time displaced.
Right. What's kind of neat, this actually serves the function of one of those things that they used to do in every comic, superhero comic, which was they'd spend a page or two, like, sometimes recapping powers and
this
stuff.
This was so fun.
And in here, she's like, okay, if we're going to function as a team, Ms. Marvel, who's definitely fallen into the leader role, she's like, we need to know what all we can do, so let's talk about it. And it's not like some bland reeling off of powers. They chat, goof around while they're doing this, show off their powers, mm-hmm. kind of get on each other's nerves a little bit.
The running gag about the Hulk's demonstration of his power cracked me up.
Yes.
I also love the sort of nerdy relationship between Miles Morales and Kamala Khan.
I don't know as much because I haven't been reading Avengers on the regular.
But they're sort of rivals but friends. Mm-hmm. They're both super smart. And so they're sort of truth or dare questions for each other, like, what's your favorite subject? What's your GPA?
Right.
It's really fun. And one thing I really think is interesting about Champions is that Ms. Marvel was introduced – she was sort of the fangirl on the outside. And when she was brought in the Avengers, she was the one there. She was the point of view character for the audience. She's the newbie and all this stuff. And they very quickly and realistically moved her into a position where she's a leader. She's the inspiration.
She kind of organically evolved into a character who's – you know, part of it is that as a new character, she got a lot of team-ups.
Yeah.
They teamed up with, like, some big-name characters like Wolverine.
Yep.
And, you know, part of that is just trying to build confidence, reader confidence in a new character. But I think her stuff with other interactions with other characters went over particularly well in the same way that Spider-Man often does.
Yeah.
And I don't know that, like I would say the character as introduced made me think, oh, yes, natural leader.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the place she's gotten to does feel natural, and it I'm not fits. Quite sure why.
Yeah, it's – well, they've done a good job of building up. She's got a sort of moral certainty that you associate with characters like Captain America.
Right.
And when you have that sort of backbone where she makes mistakes, but she's definitely – you always feel like she's on the right side of things, and if she right. isn't, she corrects it quickly. That puts her in position to be something of a leader. She's someone who can make the right decision 90% of the time.
She's also, even though she jokes around and she's kind of a nerdy smartass too,
yeah.
she's also kind of a, okay, let's stop joking. We got to get serious. This is a serious moment, guys.
Sincerity.
Yeah. So she's definitely got that going on too. And, you know, there's some good character moments in here, like the fact that they are... They're talking about, like, that you're talking about they were trading GPA yeah. versus best subject and playing truth or dare.
Yep.
And then, of course, Nova, is it, has to go and ask, was it Viv, who her first kiss was.
Yep.
And then suddenly this romantic tension is introduced in the issue. And I don't want to tell you how it plays out, but there's an interesting, it does lead to something interesting.
Yep.
As does the appearance of Cyclops, who's the sort of X factor, so to speak,
yep.
in the dynamics in this issue. And there's some I really like how he writes Cyclops.
Yeah, I do
clear,
too.
It's clear, I think, just kind of percolating in the background that Mark Waid is trying to restore faith, I think, in Cyclops.
And Lord knows he needs it.
Yes, because last not only has he, you know, for years he was just basically the buzzkill. He was the guy yeah. who was the buzzkill for Wolverine in the 90s. Sometimes they did portray him as the kind of stoic leader that is, you know, him that sort of, I guess, at his best in the old days. But a lot of times he was just the stick up the butt guy.
Yep.
And more recently they've had him outright as like kind of an Magneto-esque radical.
Yeah.
So having this, the youthful, more idealistic version who has all of that, you know, the weight of his future self on his shoulders, having to try and prove himself to these guys, is an interesting place to be. But I think clearly Mark Waid's sympathies are with him, so it means he's probably an old-school Cyclops fan.
Yep.
And I feel like he's found a good balance.
There's a couple times in here, I don't want to give them away, but there are a couple sort of old school inspirational superhero moments in here.
Yeah.
Like the, this is why I read superhero comics, this sort of, this yeah. notion is positivity, this notion of doing the right thing, that it's a little old fashioned.
Right.
But it's done in a realistic way, and I really like it. And it's what I want out of superhero comics. That's what Waid delivers more than anybody else for me right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. When I get those moments, I kind of think, like, even though they're kind of tried and true, I wish they were in more books, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
I do want to give a tip of the hat to Umberto Ramos,
whose art
is keeping it energetic and youthful. If I were to point to a teenager, like a, especially early teens, or even like pre-teenager, to kind of a fun superhero book to read, that's still got some, not like lightweight, but has, you know, an approachability to it, it would be this book, probably,
yeah.
you know, and Ms. Marvel, too, and a few others. But I feel like this is a cool team one. There's going to be fun characters you're going to, you know, kind of, like, identify with certain ones in there. So I feel like this is one of the more obvious ones to point your younger brother, sister, nephew, niece.
Well, it's a spiritual cousin to Ms. Marvel and, to some extent, Miles Morales and Nova.
If you're liking any, also, I think people who over at DC would be reading Teen Titans.
Yeah, but I think anybody who's liking those books should give this a shot. But you're right, this is Marvel's Teen Titans in a way.
Yeah, only I would say better than Teen Titans.
It's
right
better
now.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, so my pick, Champions number 2. Just pick up – this is your chance, people, to get in while on the ground floor because there's only been the 2 issues.
And we do still have
them. And we got them both.
Yep. Nick, what's your pick?
All right. Well, I'm going to continue the Marvel vein and talk about Thor, specifically the Unworthy Thor, number 1.
Unworthy
they
Thor.
Don't have any confidence in their book. They called it Unworthy right out of the gate.
Yeah, you know. Written by Jason Aaron, art by Olivier Coppiel.
People might remember from
JMS's run
on Thor, and also did he do House of M?
Yeah,
he did do House of M,
and maybe X-Men versus Avengers, or am I mixing?
You're mixing them up.
You're mixing them up. He did do a Legion of Superheroes story.
Yes, he did
early in his career.
That
I really
kind of first got his attention.
I believe it was what Legion Lost.
Yep, and I think he continued on in the regular run that Abnett Lanning did.
Yeah, he did. So he's been around for a while.
Yep.
But this is all focusing on Thor Odinson. Basically, during original Sin, He lost his ability to hold the hammer.
Yep. We still don't know why.
Something whispered to him, some secret thing that probably tarnished a moment from his past, or presumably, like, it had somebody broke his spirit a little bit and made him unworthy to hold the hammer.
And he's been kind of in weird limbo for quite a while. I mean, Jane Foster is Thor. She's been doing all that. And he's been kind of off to the side.
It looks like he's fallen into a bad place. I'm going to call it Viking depression.
Yeah, Viking depression. He's drinking a lot.
He's fighting a lot, but it's like dumb fights.
Yes.
And I don't mean that actually in a bad way. I mean that it's like presented as he's looking for trouble.
He goes out and picks fights with trolls on the moon.
Right, but that's the equivalent of a barroom brawl to a normal drunk.
Yep.
Is Thor fighting trolls on the moon.
And he's got his axe that he made of Uru steel. Yep. And he has his faithful. He lost his arm. Yes, Malekith, I think, cut it off.
So does he have a new arm?
Yeah, there was some kind of. Is it magic?
I believe it's done from the same metal, the Uru metal.
Okay.
I think the. Were they the dwarves of Asgard?
Did he get revenge on Malekith? Or is that going to be something coming? Because I feel like Thor getting his arm chopped off would piss him off about to level 11.
Well, he's been subtweeting him on Asgardian Twitter.
I think
low energy, very low energy dark elf.
Yes.
I believe that put him into an even further stupor a bit.
Right.
Because Malekith is a big bad for Jane Foster at this point.
Oh, okay.
She's
so he's fallen about as far as he can go, and this book seems like, is it looks like it's where he, maybe a place where he could channel that.
Yeah, and, but this is also about him finding out that a hammer out there does exist.
That was a weird. You had called this, Nick, and I thought you were crazy because I'm like, they're not going to make reference to that, even though Jason Aaron also wrote that story.
Yeah,
but they do, and that was really cool.
Yeah, it's a cool callback.
Should we quick say what?
No, we shouldn't. No, that's a spoiler.
It's a callback to something. But yeah, no, it's very cool. There's some great action in here. Him fighting, like Randy said, trolls on the moon.
And Ulic shows up, and I liked that.
Yeah, and Ulic.
I don't know if Ulic had been identified previously as like the king of the trolls, as he was in this. I thought he was just a badass troll.
No, he was the king of the trolls.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I will say another character in here that I didn't know I loved until this issue, and that would be Tooth Gnasher.
Oh, his goat?
It is goat.
Yeah, I really love that goat.
I meant to ask, is there a reason why he only has one goat? Did the other die?
I don't know, actually. I think
his cart traditionally always pulled by two goats.
Dave, Tooth Gnasher is his favorite. That's who he took when he descended into Asgardian depression.
No, Dave's right. He's got two goats. I don't know what happened to Tooth Grinder.
Tooth Grinder is the other.
Well,
I actually bet, I would not be surprised if Tooth Grinder got killed. I almost feel like that was a thing.
It could have been.
But he's Asgardian, so maybe he'll be back one day. But
it's true. This is his faithful steed.
But yeah, he's kind of a badass.
He can't fly anymore. He needs his goat.
Needs a goat. Yeah. Can't fly, you need a goat. That's a rule.
That is a very much rule.
Have goat, will travel.
But yes, there's big stuff here. I think anybody who's a fan of Thor, this is a book they'll definitely want to check out.
Yeah.
The art, as always, with Coppola, it's gorgeous.
Want to mention the guest star shows up at the end? I think it was in Solicits. Okay.
No, I want to feel that they're...
Okay.
And there's also another guest star in here that, if I'm correct, is another callback to something else.
Yeah, there's a guest star I wasn't crappy to see, but
yeah,
the other one
it ties back
to
Original Sin.
The other one though is a cool one. It's
it ties back
character
into
that you will know from Thor,
yeah.
And who is a awesome character to see return
and delivers a great last page.
Yeah,
but I have to say, Kripal's design work for the basically Odin's son at this point is I really like it. I mean, it's very simple. It's basically him with a cloak and some pants.
Yep, he's shirtless now, right?
He is shirtless.
He's bearing his brawny chest.
But the art in here is gorgeous. I love the design work.
It is sort of stripped down Thor. It looks like Thor, like almost like how he would appear at the end of a battle most of the time, which is, I'm sure, very deliberate. It looks like he's been worn down, and it's just the very core of who he is.
I mean, he bleeds in there. He's not like the powerful person that he was.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop him from fighting things.
He's like a big Viking warrior.
Yep. Yeah, I was reading this, and I'm like, it almost reads like Marvel's version of Conan in a lot of ways.
Yes,
yeah. And
if Conan went to space on his goat and fought trolls on the moon,
it's like some of the best stuff that like Kurt Busiek would write for when he was writing Conan. I mean, it kind of is akin to that, but with a little bit of space god stuff. So yes, that is my pick. I really loved it.
All right, my pick is a book I've been looking forward to since it was announced. It's called Occupy Avengers.
It's
another Marvel pick. This is David Walker, who has been doing Power Man and Iron Fist, which I love, and Nighthawk, which I love, and This is basically a Hawkeye solo book is what it looks like. Starts out. Hawkeye, spoilers, killed the Hulk.
Now, this was in Civil War II, and it has clearly had an effect on him.
He's been acquitted, but he is... he's basically out in the world. This starts in New Mexico, and he's in this diner, and he's being sort of mobbed by people who are thanking him for killing this monster, the Hulk. And he's sort of conflicted about it because he's like, that was my friend. I did it to help him. And there's this – Walker does this great narration where Clint is having this very introspective time. And he's gone to New Mexico because there's an Indian reservation where the water supply has been corrupted, and he's trying to sort of find some more sort of ground level things he can help on, which puts him at odds with this sort of military, this private army, and winds up teaming him up with Red Wolf, another recent series that a lot of people didn't read, but Time Displaced Indian,
yeah,
who has become a deputy of this town. And the two of them work well together. This is really fun. I like Hawkeye as sort of idealistic crusader a little bit more. This is a little bit more Hawkeye as idealistic crusader than schlubby ne'er-do-well that was Matt Fraction's character.
Right.
Although yeah. It does feel like it feels of a piece with the sort of always getting in trouble of Matt Fraction's run. But because Kate Bishop is going to be basically taking over the Hawkeye book, this is where you can get your Clint Barton fix if you need one. And I do, because I'm a big Hawkeye fan.
I feel like it's an interesting place to put Clint Barton.
I mean,
it doesn't feel like territory that he's tread before in a lot of ways.
No, but it feels like it fits him. He's always been sort of an idealist. And the notion of him going out into America and trying to fix real problems using a bow and arrow is a fun idea.
You know, it's... kind of seemingly obviously it could be easily seen as a riff on the hard traveling heroes period for Green Arrow.
Oh, totally.
He does have a buddy right now, but where that was very much about a liberal and conservative fighting their way across America, trying to find its heart.
Yeah.
I don't know how long he'll remain teamed up with Red Wolf. You think that's a permanent thing?
No, I know he's in for a couple issues. Arc. I know Nighthawk will show up in future issues.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll see a variety of characters.
Do you think this is kind of a quasi-Hawkeye team-up?
I think so. I think that Walker will be teaming up with some lesser-known characters, maybe trying to broaden the diversity of Marvel even further by introducing new characters.
I really enjoyed seeing Red Wolf in the issue.
Me too. I like their take on Red Wolf.
It's a great version.
Just a very quick backtrack to Nick's Thor. I just want to say I also like that issue, and I have not generally been following Jason Aaron's Thor. I mean, it's well written, but it just didn't grab me. But I liked that. And here we have another strong Marvel book. They're definitely doing well right now.
Yeah. There's some fun lines in here. Hawkeye has a sense of humor, even though he's sort of going through an angsty period. It is not a heavy book. It's also not a... it's not oppressive in its sort of making its points about the water supply and that kind of thing.
I felt like it was interesting in that it felt like very relevant,
but
it didn't feel like it was heavy-handed and like kind of like, here is a story that's like an issue story. Here's a very special episode.
It's not talky. It's got plenty of narration. It's got plenty of dialogue, but it's an action-adventure book. There's some action sequences. It is a superhero version of this, whereas if someone like Bendis were to write it, it'd be all talking heads.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things Walker does well, is he manages to incorporate the sort of real-world stuff with superhero action, and he does that really well. Also, the art in here is by Carlos Pacheco, and it is fantastic.
Yeah, Pacheco is one of the great Avengers artists and has done any number of awesome runs.
Yep. But great book, and delivered on all the hope I had for
it. This is a weird question about Hulk stuff.
Yep.
Doesn't he spend most of his time in New Mexico?
Yes, he does. That's why he's in New Mexico. Yes.
Okay.
Because Hulk and New Mexico had a tie. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I don't like some of the time where they make out that Hulk is a villain, like he's hurting people.
Yeah.
That is the
underpinning of Civil War II.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean,
I know. I just have to voice my dissent against that notion. Yeah. I always like him as the hero, not the monster.
I've never been a fan of it. You know, we all liked that story that Greg Pak wrote, where he revealed that Banner sort of used his advanced geometry and all that kind of stuff to basically keep Hulk from ever accidentally hurting anyone.
Yeah.
But I've heard from any number of people who found that utterly ridiculous and didn't buy it for a second.
I actually have generally been cool with the notion that Hulk sort of does at least have enough instinctiveness to that he picks his fights in abandoned areas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I just, with a little bit of superhero optimism or idealism, just presume nobody gets killed because they don't show people getting killed.
I like it, but I also think the Marvel Cinematic Universe sort of turned me around a little bit on that, that they presented Hulk as sort of this dangerous weapon.
Right.
Yeah. And I like that take. So if he is a dangerous weapon, there has to be a risk of collateral damage.
I don't mind that risk hanging around. In fact, part of the very reason why, you know, the army, I like, you know, classic Savage Hulk being tracked by the army and all that stuff. And that does require that there's a certain threat about him. It can't all just be because one time he pushed Thunderbolt Ross or something like that. It's got to be that there is some legitimate danger to him.
Well, it's
and it makes him interesting because then he's a guy fighting himself.
Well, it's the same thing that you and I have always said about things like the Joker. Like, the Joker can get away with murdering lots of people, but don't focus the story on him killing named characters or show him killing a kid.
Right.
Like, same thing with the Hulk.
If you
like,
hang on that, then you kind of ruin
things. Right. I don't mind the Hulk if there's a theory that the Hulk actually accidentally got some people killed, but don't tell me a story about the kid who was hanging around a nursing home when the Hulk smashed through it.
Right.
Like, I don't need that story. I don't want to know. Don't focus on it that way.
Yeah. Hulk is not about, as a comic, it's not about, it's about dealing with your internal anger and things like that.
Yeah.
It's not about dealing with the guilt over the millions you've slaughtered.
Yeah. And I think that Occupy Avengers walks that line pretty well.
Yes, I think so.
My backup pick is, I always forget how much I like Terry Moore until he starts a new book. And every time I read the start of a new book, I'm like, you know what? Terry Moore is both a good cartoonist, fun ideas, and has a real good sense of humor. Like, he does sort of slapstick very well and goofy character humor well. And his new book is called Motor Girl. It features a girl with, like, she's at a motor shop in, like, the desert. She's got a welding mask and a blowtorch and some tools. And there's a gorilla standing next to her with a sign that says, "Buy her comic or I'll rip your head off." That's pretty much everything you need to know about Motor Girl. It is about this girl who, she's fixing cars in this junkyard out in sort of this rural area in the middle of nowhere. Her buddy is a talking gorilla who they sort of have banter.
But it is not one of those things where it's like, oh yes, in our world the gorillas evolved into intelligent things. It's just kind of an accepted weird thing, right? Kind of a bit of quirk?
No.
Oh, did they actually explain it?
Yes. It's a hallucination. He's not real.
Oh, that's crazy.
She is a she's a vet.
Uh-huh.
She was I believe, held captive. The old lady who sort of her landlord comes in, and one of the sort of conflict is someone's offering her money to buy the shop she works at.
Uh-huh.
So she can go and you know, she could go be the race car driver or the tour of the world that she keeps talking about wanting to do, leave her comfort zone.
Uh-huh.
But the old lady, when she comes to her, talks about it and says, you know, you went through a lot. You were three tours of duty. You were held in solitary confinement for almost a year. I don't know how you got through it. And it seems clear that how she got through it was inventing this sort of wisecracking gorilla who she sees but nobody else does.
I like that as a turn as well. Do you think, Randy, that it's going to hang a little bit on PTSD?
A little bit. However, aliens do show up.
Okay.
And she asks her gorilla buddy, and again, this is not the best reality check, but she's like, did that really happen? She's like, I know I have problems with reality. And he's like, you got E.T.'s paw prints on your butt. And so I don't know if this is going to be a book all about sort of PTSD and hallucinations or if there actually is the weirdness, but it's really fun. The character's very, very likable, very winning. And this reminds me of everything I liked about Strangers in Paradise before they got into some of the weird conspiracy darkness stuff that
right.
sort of dragged it down for it a little bit for me. This is Terry Moore doing his sort of lighter best, and it's not as heavy as what he's been doing with Rachel Rising or what he did with Echo. But it does make me want to go back and read both of those books.
Right.
So if you have not read Terry Moore, if you're a Terry Moore fan, either way, I would say give this book a look. It was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
Well, there's a giant Terry Moore
omnibus.
Rachel Rising.
Rachel Rising omnibus hits this week, which yep. I at some point I need to read both Echo and Rachel Rising.
Planned this.
Yeah. I need to read Echo and Rachel Rising at some point. Dave?
Right. I'm going to, just as we all for our second pick are breaking from Marvel.
Except for Nick.
I'm going to go with a Valiant book today. It's a book I've chosen often, probably like three or four times.
Possibly every issue of the series.
Faith. This is issue number 5 of the ongoing series, also billed as the Election 2016 special. If you're a speculator on comics or are watching the news, it may end up in your radar because it has Hillary Clinton on the cover.
Yep.
So obviously that's going to make every single person love it.
Everybody loves Hillary Clinton,
right? Everybody loves Hillary Clinton.
There is no division in that. Everyone loves her. There's definitely no controversy at all there.
but if you are looking to find the comic featuring the notable appearance of our next president, this is one.
Dave, that sounds awfully overconfident.
I'm going to try to avoid that in the next, for approximately one more week.
But the interesting thing about this, just on sort of that speculator, that meta level is,
yeah.
Remember when Amazing Spider-Man came out with Obama on the cover?
Right, and that's what I was thinking of.
It was huge. Like, everybody wanted that. I don't think it's going to have the same reaction, right. But I do
She's
think there's...
not quite the unifying JFK of our time figure that Obama
She's
was.
Also not president yet. When this was done, this was done with Obama, he was president.
Right.
She's the candidate. I saw there was at least a few sort of conservative store owners who were very unhappy about this. They weren't going to rack the book.
That's interesting.
So there was some controversy from this from Valiant. And there's the question of whether or not this was a smart thing for them to do, to sort of court any kind of controversy.
Right.
When they're a small company.
Right. But and this is their most buzz book right at the moment. But it does sort of seem rather fitting for Faith. And I should say there's three stories in this issue. Hillary's in one of them. She is literally like a rally sort of thing.
Yeah.
That Faith finds herself. Let's see. She is there to write a story on it. She's not necessarily there as a supporter.
She's covering it as a blogger.
She's not there because like some bad guy is going to attack.
No.
Stuff does occur there, but I suppose I should say it's not just a Faith endorses Hillary Clinton for president.
No, they don't shake hands and look at the camera and say, "And now vote, America."
Yeah.
Actually, they might say exactly that.
They do. It is extolling the virtue of our system.
Yeah. It's encouraging voting. They're very even-handed about sort of every side has its problems. Every side has its attributes.
Right. They're good people out there. So it is not. Although they did choose one candidate over the other to
That's
make their appearance.
That's true.
It is not a let's spend the issue trying to get her elected.
Right.
What I did find was it had all the normal stuff I liked about the Faith comic, beginning with a sort of topical story where there's a young actress who's kind of like one of those Disney girls, squeaky clean girls, who's been pushed into a bad place because like some of her naughty photographs she sent her boyfriend ended up kind of tanking her career.
Yeah.
And circumstances.
So, just as what happened to Miley Cyrus, a talking cat comes and offers her power.
Correct, and she begins seeking her revenge.
Yes, that is exactly the Miley Cyrus story to a T.
Is the talking cat like a?
This is a new thing to me. I've read a lot of Valiant. I don't ever remember the talking cat.
I was just wondering if it was like a weird reference to like Sabrina or something like that.
Yeah, it could be.
Who was the actress who played her?
That was Melissa Joan Hartley, I believe.
Melissa Joan Hart.
Whatever. I got
she
close.
Didn't get it. She didn't get into big time trouble, did she?
I don't think so.
I don't know. She didn't go Britney.
I don't follow Disney teen stars that much.
But that's a good sort of ongoing story that gets set up there. There's actually a fun scene at a mall here where Faith meets a kid who wonders if it's really Faith or just some chick wearing her costume. And she just starts floating and she's like, real. then there's the center story is the sort of the Hillary one, which again, if only sort of like, no matter where you stand on the political spectrum, if only for sort of that novelty in the same way that like Reagan appeared in comics in the 80s,
yep.
Obama did in the 2000s, it's
Clinton
pretty,
was, Bill Clinton was all over comics.
Yeah. It's notable for that. And if you're looking to buy a comic and slab it or give it to your democratically minded loved ones as like, here, hold on to this. It'll be worth $10 million in a few years, or in 1 week.
Or you can give it to your Trump-loving relatives, and they can hold it up as a Dewey beats Truman thing if he wins.
Yes. then there's sort of a final story that's sort of a little bit about it's kind of an idealistic story where Faith meets a kid who's a one of those psyots who's been kind of pushed into coerced into using her powers for bad stuff. And it's sort of a sweet story about her kind of bonding with this kid and trying to realizing, you know, the difference she can make on sort of a personal level to people sometimes on an individual level or as like an inspirational figure. Just another all-around good issue that of a series that pretty much every issue I have liked.
And a jumping on point to the series.
Yeah.
And also worth noting that Volume 2 of Faith, which is the first issues of the ongoing, come out and trade this week.
Yep. So, yes, you should check out Valiant's most approachable character, their 20-something geek girl.
Yeah.
Nicholas.
Yes.
Let's take it back to Marvel then.
Take it back to Marvel
yep.
for a new book called Avengers #1.
What's that book about? Avenging?
Yeah, so if I'm not
Who do they avenge?
There are things avenged. No, but correct me if I'm wrong. This is taking the place of All New, All Different, correct?
This is, yeah, All New, All Different sort of ended and was replaced by Champions and this book.
Correct.
All the younger heroes went off to Champions. What remained of all of the Avengers was the new Wasp.
Sam Wilson,
the Vision, and Jane Foster. Yeah.
Yep.
Which is, say, Captain America and Thor.
Yeah.
This actually adds it opens with them teaming up with Hercules.
That was fun.
And
that's cool. I haven't read this yet.
Yeah, the opening page is great.
Yep.
And basically he joins the team.
Yep.
So,
yep. It was like sort of a real casual, like, hey, you know, you were helpful and, We just lost some of our strength and you're a strong guy and
you've
been an Avenger for a long time and he's like, hey, I've been trying to revamp my image. Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It felt very much in line with the Hercules that was Greg Pak
it was Abnett. Dan Abnett's Hercules.
Yeah, we're doing some great stuff with Hercules recently.
Yep.
That's cool. That particularly makes me want to read it because. I didn't quite know what it brought to the table, honestly, Hercules has been awesome lately,
sort of opens with this action sequence against an Asgardian threat.
Yep.
And a lot of banter between the team, then sort of bleeds into introducing Peter Parker and sort of what he might bring to the Avengers table.
All right, I want to say something here, and you guys are going to think I've been replaced with a Skrull. I like Spider-Man and these Avengers. I like Spider-Man and the Avengers in this one.
Well, I think we were talking about this last week, and I think...
Get out.
And I believe you said that this more sort of grown-up version of Peter Parker and kind of the tech-savvy one kind of makes more sense.
It makes a lot more sense. Well, especially the role they give him here, which I love.
Yes.
My favorite part of the issue was that Tony Stark is gone because of events that have happened in Civil War 7 and 8 that we haven't read yet. And so they need a new backer. They need a new company. And Parker Industries
is... Parker's pretty rich.
Yeah, he's rich now. So,
and he wants to help out. I mean...
It was really good.
And we get sort of this fun tech... You know, get to see all the tech stuff that he wants to bring to the table. Again, some more great humor nods from Mark Waid.
Some good character stuff, especially between Wasp and Spider-Man.
Yes. And then another threat. And a threat... I mean, I don't think it's going to be spoiling too much that it involves an Avengers villain, Kang.
Who he's been using for All New, All Different as well. This is a continuation to some extent, but it does feel like a new jumping on
point. Yeah, and that seems to be like the big threat that they're going to be focusing on. I will say the art was a little bit of a surprise. It's Mike Del Mundo.
Who did Elektra
a while back, and his stuff is definitely...
He's sort of a stylish painter.
Yes.
Not Alex Ross realism, but not like wild surrealism or anything, too, or super cartoony.
It's a lot of splash paste. It reminds me of what Daniel Acuna's stuff used to look like.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because it is not what you think of. Like, I would have imagined a Neil Adams-style realist or even like a Carlos Pacheco or one of those guys. But this is a different look, and it's unusual. I'm not sure I'm used to it yet, but I like the idea.
Yeah. And I feel like that Mark Waid has me. I like Kang, so I like him as a big villain, and I love this team.
Yeah.
The team is great.
What do you like about Kang, Nick?
I think I love the look as a kid.
He does have a cool
costume.
He has
a great costume.
I feel like they've gone to some really convoluted places with his backstory, like, you know, so that he...
Even when I was a kid, it was, like, complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he can travel forward and backward,
He's got all these different incarnations, too. He's got Scarlet Centurion and Ramatut and Immortus and Kang. He, like, becomes different people throughout time.
At one point, like, Reed Richards' father.
Yeah.
It's some bizarre level thing.
But, like, at its basics, he's a time-traveling conqueror.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what I always...
usually you don't necessarily need to know whatever his background insanity is. They'll tell you whatever the main stuff to know.
Ever since Young Avengers, they've tied him in with the Vision to some extent.
Yeah. And this is continuation of that. And maybe it's kind of a final confrontation between those two, or they hope that it is.
Yeah.
But no, I love it. I love the inclusion of Hercules. He's always been one of my favorites. So, no, I just think it's a fun book. It's a great number one.
I need to read it.
And it's double-sized.
Yep. Nick, what else is on your stack?
Not a lot this week. I will say the 10th issue of Superman, which starts the new story arc in the name of the Father.
When are we getting that Super Sons book? Because people have been asking me about that.
I believe it should be coming up. But if they want sort of to see a prelude to that,
yeah.
This is a great story arc because this is basically Damian kidnapping Jonathan Kent.
Sure.
Because he feels he's a threat to everyone. You know, because that's Damian. But it's a lot of fun. The 10th issue of Batman, which is the second part of I Am Suicide, which sees Batman infiltrate Santa Prisca with his own team of villains.
That's interesting.
It's an interesting because of the people he picks. It's like Arnold Wesker and Ben Turner.
Damn it, I'm going to back and read Batman now.
And also Catwoman. And
who's Arnold Wesker?
The Ventriloquist.
The Ventriloquist.
Oh, right.
And Punch and Julie.
Oh, wow.
So it's this really oddball team.
And Julie were like, they were in the Suicide Squad for a year or two back in some of its best days.
They were the Harley and Joker before Harley and Joker.
But yeah. In the first issue of I Am Suicide, there's this scene where he recruits Bronze Tiger. And it kind of informs that they're friends. They've always been friends.
You know what's cool? Bronze Tiger hasn't been in Suicide Squad. That's cool.
Yeah.
This is more like my Suicide Squad than the one they're currently
doing. And it feels like the relationship that they formed on Batman Brave and the Bold.
Okay.
Sort of like they hated each other at first and then became, you know, like friends.
Damn, I'm going to have to go back and read this.
It's a fun book, and I love the notion of you know, them infiltrating Bane's fortress.
Yeah, I like Santa Prisca.
You know, I went back and read the previous issue of Detective, which I had missed, the first one after Monsterman.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, that issue was really good. It reminded me of why I liked that book so much, of the various Rebirth titles, that it was still one of the top ones.
Nice.
So that was also good.
And then there's the second issue of the crossover I Never Thought I Wanted. And that is Big Trouble in Little China, Escape from New York.
This is so much fun.
I will say, yeah, Greg Pak is just doing amazing things here. It's so much fun. So I laughed out loud so much. And
well, the pitch for it is great. The sort of that they drag Jack Burton into the sort of post-apocalyptic future of Snake Plissken. He's got the voices of both characters down.
Yeah.
And they're sort of alt sideways version of Wang Chi is great. It's so much fun. I did not expect to like this book as much as I'm liking it.
And the art is gorgeous.
Oh, the art by Bayless is really good.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Trad Moore and some
of that
kind of over-the-top type, but over-the-top is perfect for those two properties.
Yeah. It's also got a little bit of that cartooniness that I see in Chu.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, but this is a blast. Then I've got the 5th issue of Flintstones, which I haven't had a chance to read.
I need to catch up on that book.
But this one is all about Bedrock the Vote.
Bedrock the Vote. That's great.
And there's a bunch of other stuff in there, too, that I was flipping through.
I don't think we talked about issue 4 specifically here, but when I got around to reading it, it was a ton of fun. That was the issue where spoofing marital issues of our time, but by upending them so that in, like, the caveman times, polygamy is the standard. You know, it's like, oh, it's the only way to survive. And so, like, Fred and Wilma getting married in a monogamous relationship is there. Everybody is like, oh, you're destroying the civilization.
You know,
and it also had Adam and Steve as characters in it, which was
great. It's funny. If someone had told me the Flintstones was going to be the home for sharp sociopolitical satire, I would have thought they were crazy.
Yeah.
But apparently that's what's going on.
Yeah. And sometimes the book is just bonkers, by the way.
And this is all about sort of political themes and voting. I see that there is a kid, I assume, running for office in their school, says, vote for me or I'll punch you in the beef. So there's just great satire all around in this one. And the art by Steve Pugh is great.
Yeah, his art has been some of the best art I've seen from him, like, ever, actually.
And 3rd issue of Death of X, so if you're curious to see what happens to Cyclops.
Cyclops, what did you do?
Exactly. 2nd issue of Death of Hawkman.
If you're curious to see what happens to Hawkman.
Spoilers
in the title.
And then there's the 2nd issue of Midnighter and Apollo. And I didn't... I went back and read the first issue because when it first came out, I didn't get a chance. I found it to be an extremely good read.
Hmm.
Steve Orlando, I guess, has really come back and done some great things with Midnighter.
Well, Orland did that really good Midnighter run.
Yeah. And there were some big turns in the first issue that were very unexpected. And also this pits him, the Midnighter up against, I always mispronounce this name, but Mauser?
The gun demon from Hitman.
I assume it's Mauser.
Yeah, like the gun.
Just definitely.
Yeah. And seeing sort of him go toe-to-toe with, you know, a demon that really can't die is interesting. And some fantastic artwork, great panel layouts and things like that. So I'm really enjoying that series.
Dave?
I got a trippy book from Oni here called Matro, I'm guessing is how you say it. I don't know how you say it. I feel like this is so clearly in the school of people who like Brandon Graham stuff.
Yeah.
That I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it has this sort of like that slightly apocalyptic fantasy sort of look that he has. I'm sure this artist writer artist probably has Dead Stuffer Island, his anthology magazine probably. And I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to say if you're in any way a fan of Brandon Graham, just go ahead and read it.
The art is pretty stunning.
It's almost certainly going to be up your alley. There's an issue of Scarlet Witch here. I got the second issue of Shade the Changing Girl, which was, of the young animal stuff I'd read so far, is my favorite, but I haven't read the second issue yet, so we'll see. There's the Catwoman Election Night Special, which I don't know quite what they're doing in that.
I don't know. I see Prez is in there.
Yeah,
there's a backup story with
their teen superhero.
Oh, okay. And I don't know, is Penguin running for mayor? I assume he's running for mayor.
Political stuff, I think Catwoman was hired to steal. It was the election. It looks interesting.
And then last, I just want to mention, they did put out they've been doing those nice complete ElfQuest volumes from Dark Horse. Yep. They've reprinted all 8 volumes in 2 big ol' omnibuses of that was the original stuff from the original creators. And now they're getting to the part where they kind of, the creators let some other people in there and to do stories. So, like, they opened it up as a sandbox at the time. This is, like, in the 90s.
Yeah.
And you got a bunch of talented writers and artists working on it. So this is the Complete ElfQuest Volume 3. And interestingly, where all the other stuff was in black and white, this one has some really beautiful color work. Huh. I don't know quite why they chose to let the originals be in black and white. Maybe they just prefer that artwork.
Some of this is black and white,
whereas
too.
Whereas the follow-up, this does have some black and white in it, but some of the follow-up stuff from other artists was allowed to be in color, though. Anyway, be that as it may, if you're following any of these stories, hey, it's more of the with these characters and stuff, so you're going to want to pick it up.
All right, I've got Spider-Woman number 13, which I've been really enjoying this book. Veronica Fish comes on board and does a really nice job on the art, which I was worried about the change in art. And this is also a sort of the start of a story that's going to pit Spider-Woman against Hobgoblin, the new Hobgoblin that was introduced. Javier Rodriguez, I think that might be the first place he did a regular series for Marvel. And there's some notable stuff going on with the supporting cast of Ben Urich and Roger, the porcupine.
Yep.
And it goes in a sort of a darker direction than I would have expected. So I'm curious to see where they go with that. I've been really liking that book. Moon Knight number 8 continues to be bewildering and great. There's guest artists, so they've got Francisco Francavilla, James Stocco, Wilfredo Torres, as well as a slight reappearance by Greg Smallwood, the regular artist on the book.
It's a pretty huge list of awesome artists.
And so each one of them takes a different character, basically. So Francavilla is writing the sort of streetwise stuff that features Jake Lockley, the cabbie, as he's being accused of a big mass murder. Stephen Grant, the movie producer, is being drawn by the more straightforward Wilfredo Torres. And James Stocco is doing the bonkers Moon Knight versus werewolves on the moon in space kind of thing.
That's so bizarre. Does that one have a particular antecedent?
No, this is all new.
Okay.
This is a new thing here. But the way this all leads, we're 8 issues into this now, and I'm still enjoying it, but I think we're all like, hey, tell us what's going on. I believe we're getting to the point where they're going to reveal this has all been in his head, that this is a multiple personality disorder sort of is acting out. But I'm still fascinated by it, and I find it to be a really interesting
read. Is it possible that somebody in sort of attempting to kind of clarify the pathways of his neural network of his brain and kind of get him back to reality is pushing him through all these weird scenarios?
It's possible. I get the sense that maybe it's just him and he's dealing with it in his head. He may be in a mental hospital somewhere. We'll see.
Yep.
Also, There are a few hardcovers for me this week. Unbeatable Scroll Girl Volume 1, which collects the first two trades worth, the first 8 issues plus some specials that she was in. And then Star Wars Heroes for a New Hope, which is not about hunger in Africa, although you might guess that from the name.
That is a weird callback, Randy.
That's an 80s reference.
In case anybody doesn't get that, the X-Men Heroes for Hope Aid to Africa special from, I'm going to say, like 1983.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere there, maybe yeah. 85.
Yep. Stephen King's first published comic, by the way.
Ah,
yep.
Interesting.
Anyway, this is actually a hardcover collecting the Princess Leia, Lando, and Chewbacca miniseries. So I've been picking up all these Star Wars hardcovers. It is my preferred format. And if it is also your preferred format, guess what? You got a Star Wars hardcover to buy. That about wraps it up for us this week in terms of comics. We'll be back in just a second to talk about a movie and a TV show and possibly something else. Dave, as always on this show, I turned to you to tell me about biblical conspiracies and flagellating monks.
It's what I know.
Yeah.
It's the life I lead.
Yes. Wow. So turn, sure, if you will,
in your downtime?
To Dave Farabee's Dan Brown corner.
That's right. This weekend I saw Inferno. I'd actually been kind of wanting to see it as the trailers looked kind of pleasantly bonkers from some months ago. There were drones flying around. What's his name? Robert Langdon had amnesia. There was all this crazy imagery from Dante's Inferno. And I had read the book, so I knew the story and everything. The book has terrible writing, but like the other stuff with Dan Brown's thing, a fun plot. If you can kind of roll with the writing or amuse yourself at its kind of somewhat of its awfulness, then there's a decent story to be had there. It's like a slightly less gonzo National Treasure. But it is still gonzo in its way. It's just that I kind of like the stuffy middle-aged professor, I guess, as hero is a fun enough idea. But you know, definitely you're not going to go to this one looking for a for any depth or anything like that. You have to be willing to work with Tom Hanks, symbologist hero. That said, I actually had a surprising amount of fun with it. It's very this type of movie. It's very energetic. Ron Howard, his directing is much more, I would say, frenetic in this one. Mm-hmm. It's a good score from Hans Zimmer. And yes, indeed, there's a guy. It sort of deals with overpopulation and a sort of guy who has a radical notion of releasing a plague to cull the herd. He's sort of like a, you know. Either you the inferno of it, I think, is his prediction of like the hell on earth that will come if we do not cull the herd. For various reasons, they are trying to track down this toxin after the guy who created it, the sort of mastermind, he dies early on, but it's like his followers are trying to get access to it, and they there's a race. Langdon wakes up with no memory of the last 2 days. He's in Italy. He's in a hospital. People are trying to kill him. It's ridiculous, but kind of cool. You know, I was thinking about this, and there's a little bit of that fun everyman hero that Hitchcock used to do all the time. The guy who's, you know, he may not be a badass fighter or whatever, yep, but he's quick on his feet and can survive these sort of things. This is not Hitchcock level material, but it's fun enough. Let's see what else to say about it. Has some creepy imagery in it, some legit weird imagery from Dante's Inferno, because Tom Hanks' dude is having these flashbacks because of his head injury, and he's a little, oh, why do I keep seeing this like a clock in my head? What does it mean? You know, it must have been relevant to things going on. But while he's thinking about this, he's seeing flashes of like the streets of Italy, and like the people are walking around, and I can't remember everything going on, but it'd be like they're all weeping blood, and it's Inferno type stuff. The coolest one was these people with their heads twisted backwards, which I think was supposed to be like, you know, on one of the levels of hell, this is what all the, like, liars have happened, you know, because they were two-faced, in hell their heads are turned backwards. It may not be that, but something like that. And it looked pretty disturbing. That said, Let's see. I don't know if there's anything else to say other than surprisingly fun. I gather it's been getting pilloried in the reviews, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of the series or anything.
Yeah.
I think I watched Da Vinci Code and found it pretty meh, and I never saw the second one.
I heard Angels and Demons was worse.
But
I don't really know. I haven't seen it
yet. Yeah, I don't know either.
So here's my question.
Yeah?
If you're doing a modern-day League of Extraordinary Gentlemen type thing.
Yeah.
You do what? Robert Langdon?
Sure.
Who's the guy from National Treasure? Nicolas Cage's.
Yeah, although then you're
Benjamin
kind of combining
Gates.
Movies.
Benjamin Gates.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is usually characters I think from fiction, like prose.
Yeah, no, Dave. What I'm talking about is the best of the Avengers stuff.
Oh,
back here.
Yeah.
So if you get, I'm thinking as Robert Langdon, you get Benjamin Gates, you get Jack Reacher, you get Tom Cruise's Jack Reacher.
Yeah, sure.
You get Harrison Ford's Jack Ryan, maybe.
Yeah,
And I feel like there's somebody else.
They all have to be very modern, so you have to get the is it Shadow Recruit or whatever?
Oh God, no, Chris Pine.
Yes.
Yikes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there would be there's some fun characters from the basically you know if you're grabbing I guess Jack Ryan, you're going with like what 80s.
No, you can't go 80s because 80s then you want to go like all the Predator guys and all that kind of stuff. But
well, I'm just saying Jack. Okay, you're assuming
I'm talking
Jack
about the
Ryan
I'm talking about the modern day. You're right. Chris Pine makes more sense.
Yeah.
Or it could be the new one from The Office or.
Oh yeah, Jim Halpert.
Yeah,
Jim
I would Halpert. Assume, by the way, that you would probably grab Jason Bourne.
Jason too. Bourne, that's the other one. Yeah,
he'd be the heavy, but also Jack Reacher.
Yeah, but that'd be a formidable force.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun notion. You
I
know,
like
these,
the idea.
These League of Extraordinary Gentlemen notions are always kind of fun.
Is there a problem? There are no women in that team at all?
Because
there aren't any female action heroes, right? Like maybe Gina Carano's character from Haywire, but that's a bit of a reach.
You occasionally get female action heroes, and it's stuff like I don't know Lucy.
Yeah,
the track record is not as strong. I feel like I'm missing somebody.
They need to fix that because I feel like I feel like there's somebody out there I'm not missing.
Yeah,
but
I don't know Helen Mirren in Red.
Oh man, Helen Mirren's character from Red—that'd be perfect.
Okay, I haven't seen it, but I just assumed it was awesome.
Well, she's awesome. I don't know how the movie's up.
Well, the movie Red's fun. The first one's fun.
What else we got?
All right, and then I was going to talk about Dirk Gently's Solistic Detective Agency.
Oh, that is him.
Yeah. First episode. Interesting pedigree on this one. I guess IDW, the guys who do the comics, are getting into TV a little bit. Like they're the ones who sort of shepherded this
really?
Through. They're one of the production companies, and. This is a show that's on BBC America. It is it's set in like San Francisco, which is kind of weird. It's a British show, sort of transplanted to San Francisco. The only British character is Dirk Gently. The lead character is played by Elijah Wood, and he's like this bellboy at this hospital. I've never read Dirk Gently, by the way.
Yep.
So I don't know how true this is to the books. I've talked with my friend Les, who has read the books. They said that they added a lot of stuff, like Elijah Wood's character is whole cloth, but. I wasn't
Elijah
sure.
Wood is not playing Dirk Gently.
He's not playing Dirk Gently.
Okay.
He is a bellboy who gets drawn in and sort of becomes this Watson accidentally and is not happy with it.
Interesting. Who plays Dirk Gently?
I forget the guy's name.
Okay, it's not known.
He's somebody I don't. He's great.
Gotcha.
He's really
okay.
Fun. This is a show that I was expecting to watch basically because I do a TV podcast and I wanted to weigh in on it and then never watch again.
Yeah.
And instead, I'm like, oh, this is really good.
Huh?
It's really funny. It's got sort of the weirdness of there's like this military team of two guys that are following them around for some reason. There's these like post-apocalyptic like biker guys who show up and seem to drain some life energy out of Dirk. And then there's a girl who's been kidnapped, who's one of the main characters. We only see like trying to work her way out of her bonds the whole episode. Mm-hmm. There's a murder that took place.
It seems surprisingly like surrealist or like Twin Peaksy.
It's strange, but it's not Twin Peaksy. It's more goofy than that.
Right.
It's really fun and really likable. And I was there's a hint that like he is watching. He gets off the elevator at some point and sees someone that is obviously his past self, but he can't tell or future self, but he doesn't know who it is. But we can tell who it is.
Right.
And there's just all this weird sort of stuff going on around, you know, a murder mystery and a case that Dirk Gently basically stumbles into. And he's this sort of upbeat, optimistic guy who's talking about how, you know, the universe sort of guides him where it needs him and that kind of thing. It's a very Douglas Adams concept.
Yep.
And I was very taken with it. It's definitely a lot of fun. If you like sort of quirky British fun stuff, it's definitely worth a look.
Okay. And I believe you are not to be, you are not generally like an Anglophile. I love all things British TV.
I am not an Anglophile. No, I'm not. I'm not really a big guy. I mean,
you
I've watched
stuff. You like Broadchurch. You've liked Doctor Church. Who.
I like
there's
Doctor
stuff,
Who.
There's stuff out there for sure that you like Sherlock, but it's not like your thing. So the fact that this one should kind of grab you.
Yeah.
And I know it's not like strictly a British production, or is it?
No, it's BBC America. It feels more American than British.
Right. But you were not predisposed to like it just because, oh, I do love that weird British humor.
No, I've never read Dirk Gently. I really didn't think this is going to be my, I did not think this is going to be my thing, but yeah. It turns out it's a lot of fun and definitely nice. Worth people looking nice. At. All right. I think that's it for us. That's it for us this week. We'll be back at you next week. And until next time, Yo Joseph.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.